Much, John, for the introduction, and thank each and every one of you for being with us here this morning. It's great to see you all here with us. Again, I'm Catalina Garzon with the Pacific Institute. I'll be presenting with my colleague Eli Moore. And just to give you a sense of what we'll be doing and talking about this morning, I'm going to talk briefly about more about what Pacific Institute does, and then give an overview of how community mapping is a popular education tool that can be used to build analysis around environmental health and justice issues. And then we're going to talk about two different kinds of projects in which we used a popular education and community mapping approach. One is a project in which we hand-created maps with community residents in West Contra Costa County, California. I'll talk more about that area, where it's located, and the kinds of issues that the neighborhood folks face there. And then a second project called the Freight Transport People's Map that we created with a regional coalition in the Bay Area that involved secondary data mapped using GIS at the regional scale in the Bay Area. And then we'll just offer some conclusions based on the work we've done. So first, just a little background about who we are. The Pacific Institute is a nonprofit environmental research institute based in Oakland, California. We conduct interdisciplinary multi-stakeholder research at the intersection of economic vibrancy, environmental protection, and social equity issues. And the Community Strategies for Sustainability and Justice program of the institute has been around for about 15 years now. And we partner with community groups and coalitions to conduct action research and provide technical support to organizing and advocacy campaigns at a local level. So some examples of the work our program has done or partnerships that we've engaged in are two multi-issue, multi-year neighborhood indicators project partnerships, one in West Oakland, one in West Contra Costa County, where we engaged a wide cross-section of community leaders in identifying and prioritizing key issues in their neighborhood that they wanted to document through neighborhood-level indicators, and then actually went out and did the research. If there was no secondary data available, then we did primary data collection using participatory research approaches with community leaders to collect that information. We were also working on a couple different projects, one around local climate adaptation in the city of Oakland with the Oakland Climate Action Coalition, so working with community leaders there to assess what areas of Oakland stand to be most affected by climate issues, climate change issues, and what can community leaders do to strengthen the resilience of these communities before a major disasters hit. And then we're also doing some work in the Central Valley of California, a nitrate study conducted in partnership with a community water center looking at nitrate contamination in drinking water there. So that's just a sampler of some of the kinds of projects we do. Today we're going to be focusing mostly on the projects we're doing related to documenting air quality and health disparities related to diesel pollution and freight transportation. And so I'm going to talk more about what that is. That's going to be the focus of our talk today. So I just wanted to give a little overview of what our approach to community mapping is. We really see the process of mapping as kind of an added value tool, a tool that can be used to document lived experience with environmental health disparities and environmental injustices, but it is also a kind of a way of telling stories. Maps are powerful ways to represent or create a representation of community lived realities and experiences, not just community problems, but also community assets and strengths that people want to protect and are proud of in their communities. So we really try to take an asset-based approach to a lot of the work we do on community mapping issues. Community mapping can also, of course, illustrate very well kind of the two pillars of environmental justice, which are distributive justice and procedural justice. So maps can be used to show inequities in how environmental resources or environmental burdens are distributed across an area. So they're a powerful tool for telling the story of environmental injustice in terms of the distribution of pollution or health disparities somewhere. And they can also be a powerful way of addressing procedural justice issues, and that by engaging community residents in creating their own maps, their own representations of their community through the map, it enables these leaders to kind of develop a critique or critical lens for looking at, you know, what kind of data goes into telling the story of their community. Is this data accurate? Does it really reflect community lived experiences? And to push back on agencies that create maps as representations to justify the decisions that they make that affect people's everyday lives. So it can be a powerful tool for pointing out, you know, what's missing in these maps, what's not captured, or can enable ground truthing at a community level to point out the mismatch between what a community experiences and what the data is saying about what that community experiences. So it can be a very powerful tool for environmental justice. So our approach to community mapping is really rooted in the principles of popular education. So we really see this the process of mapping as a tool that can kind of move people from raising more of a collective awareness of their common struggles and visions for their community through to recognizing kind of shared experiences and patterns across experiences, and then building a shared analysis of the root causes of those experiences, which can in turn kind of generate really powerful discussions about what the solutions to these problems or solutions to positively advance their visions for community could look like. And lastly, they can mapping can be used to actually document or create a representation of data that can be used to advocate for community solutions with policymakers. So for example, the issue we're talking about today, the issue of freight transport, it's the movement of goods via ship, truck, train, or plane from where a product or a raw material is made or collected to where it's sold. So it encompasses a huge range of issues. And basically, can think about in thinking about freight transport is you may have several people in the community that are experiencing things that are related to it. So long delays at train intersections, or a hard time walking their kids from their homes to schools across tracks. And then people begin to see the patterns in their experiences and that they're really related to land use conflicts, for example, between rail yards and railroads in their communities and residential areas that are located right next door. And then can be used to advocate for different solutions. So quickly, some of the health impacts that this has include the diesel pollution that's generated by trucks and trains, which can impact respiratory health, noise and vibrations, which disrupt sleep and concentration and can impair learning, traffic delays, like I mentioned, and pedestrian safety hazards in communities. And I'm going to sort of fast track this and transition to Eli, because I'm not sure if we have enough time, but okay. Oh, thank you. Wasn't sure if it was okay. So just to say, by way of introduction, give an overview of what freight transport issues look like in the geography of the San Francisco Bay Area. Many people know, you know, the icon of the Bay Area is the Golden Gate Bridge, but few people realize that 1,900 cargo ships pass under that bridge every year, most of them en route to the Port of Oakland, which is the fourth busiest containerized port in the United States. And from that port, they are loaded onto trucks and trains a huge infrastructure that takes them through the communities of Richmond, Oakland, San Leandro, a lot of the communities in the East Bay where the red arrow is pointing, that are disproportionately low income in communities of color, predominantly African American, Latino. And so these are the communities that are bearing the brunt of the externalities of the economic system that we depend on to get everything we need, our food, our clothes, our electronics. These are the folks that are dealing with the diesel pollution, the pedestrian hazards, the other negative impacts of living near these kinds of land uses. So today we're going to be talking about two different projects. One is, the first is Project 12898, which is a community-based transportation planning project we did in West Contra Costa County, which is where the arrow is located. And we did that in partnership with the County Health Services Agency and several community-based groups there, including the West County Toxics Coalition and the Neighborhood House of North Richmond. The project was named by the community partners after the Executive Order on Environmental Justice passed by President Clinton in 1994, so that's where 12898 comes from. The second project we did with the Diesel Collaborative, which is a regional coalition of community groups and allied organizations working to reduce pollution from diesel trucks and trains in the San Francisco Bay Area. And that was a GIS mapping project that we did. So just quickly to introduce Project 12898, the goals of this project was really to engage community members in the decision making related to transportation and land use that affect their everyday lives with the issue of freight trains in the West Contra Costa County area. And so the way we started out that project is we were working with outreach workers at the Neighborhood House of North Richmond. We conducted a community survey to identify what the key issues with freight-related problems in the neighborhood were. Based on that survey, we created a map legend where we not only, developed icons to represent some of the key issues that came out of the survey, like pedestrian safety issues, like truck or train idling and traffic congestion caused by long delays at the tracks. We also created icons to document places that people wanted to protect and strengthen. So neighborhood treasures, like where we live, where we work, where we play, neighborhood schools and clinics, for example. And what we wanted to get through this mapping process was to document the places where people had problems with, had experienced problems with freight trains and trucks in the neighborhood, and then to really look at where the concentrations of those problems were and start to talk about how we generate solutions to those problems. So for example, like I mentioned, one of the key root causes identified out of this process was the land use conflicts between industrial areas, including the rail yard in Richmond and the crisscross of rail lines that lead from the Port of Oakland into the Richmond rail yard, and residential areas in the neighborhood. So I'm going to transition now to Eli, who's going to talk more about the outcomes of that process.
Hey, everybody. We feel like mapping's a really powerful tool, and it's becoming used more and more with GIS technology and more data availability, but figuring out methods so that it really is a process that's owned by the community and reflects community voices and representation is tricky and is something we don't see a lot of methods out there. So we wanted to get a little bit into the nitty-gritty of how we did what we did, because we feel like it offered some glimpses at no matter the issue, how some of these tools can be adapted. So we began with that map legend and base maps of aerial photos with labels for streets. Four foot by 6 foot posters on tables that people gathered around. Over these base maps, we put transparencies and offered stickers of those icons that you saw in the legend. So people took the stickers and the base maps and started talking and mapping what they knew of where the hazards were, where the assets were in their neighborhoods, and began just sharing their stories of one, you know, on my street, I keep having safety issues with these trucks, or, you know, on my street, everybody has asthma. And so you'll see here just a zoomed in photo of one of the maps. So you'll see the heart is a school up there. The money signs are where some people work. The pedestrian sign is pedestrian safety, and then the magnets are magnet sources drawing in the trucks. And then the little tailpipe is air quality issues. So this was a way of generating discussion both about people's personal experiences, but then also about the spatial distribution of those experiences and what was the kind of collective view of what was going on in the neighborhood. And then we wanted to get into what were the causes of these issues, and we feel like for mapping to really be powerful, you have to have information on the map about that is about the root causes, that is about the causal factors, one of which is land use. So what we did to start to discuss land use related root causes was to take that transparency of people's experiences and the stickers and put it over a map of land use designations and zoning. To look at the dark gray here being industrial land use. You can see the baseball diamond right next to industrial land use. You can see the light gray is residential. It's pretty much surrounded in this neighborhood by industrial land uses. And so it became a powerful way to talk about this a little bit abstract concept of land use conflicts and the often kind of arcane process of zoning. And at this time, the city was involved in updating its general plan, so there were also political opportunities to have community input into zoning and land use. So then with that discussion of what were the root causes and how does land use relate, we start talking about solutions, which were focused around what were the opportunities in the general plan update and how could we analyze the land use alternatives that they were putting out using the community's knowledge of what each different land use alternative would mean for community health. So from this project, we wanted to offer a few observations. We feel like the neighborhood scale really helps people see themselves in the map because you can actually pick out your house or your park and things like that. So the aerial photos and the neighborhood scale are powerful in that way. The use of the transparencies was really helpful because, like with GIS, the layering is such an important aspect of mapping. But with hard copy mappings, that's not possible unless you use the transparencies. And then the low-tech approach really made it a very accessible process and easy to understand and easy to replicate. So these tools are now able to be used by the community-based organizations on an ongoing basis without technical support. And then a couple limitations. One is that freight transport issues are very much determined by regional dynamics. So you saw the port, you saw the rail lines, and so only looking at a neighborhood scale, you miss that big picture root cause. And then with these maps, with the stickers on these high resolution maps will cover like a whole block or more. And so converting the community-generated maps to GIS maps is difficult because you don't get the precise location that you need in a GIS map. So transitioning to the other project done at a regional scale with the Ditching Dirty Diesel Collaborative, the goals there with this collaborative, they wanted data on the regional picture of freight transport issues, both focused on health outcomes, socioeconomic data, and freight transport infrastructure and traffic data in order to build a shared analysis of what that regional picture looked like and then to use the maps in advocacy because a lot of the decisions on freight transport issues are made at a regional scale by these regional agencies. So what we did here was begin by talking about what do we want to see in these maps, what are the issues that people want to have information on, and what relationships do we want to look at. So like I said, it was about asthma and health other health outcomes, race, income, freight transport infrastructure, traffic. So with that input on what were the features, we developed a set of maps. This is one example with a layer on percent people of color by census tract, and then freight rail traffic. So you'll see these rail lines cutting across the dark green areas where it's predominantly communities of color, and then some of the main infrastructure like the ports and the airports. So there was a ton of discussion on these maps, and a lot of it was about how limited they were and how false they were in their representation of what was going on. But it definitely improved the capacity to analyze agency data, because when you see it in a table, when you see it written in these technical reports, it's harder to see how they're representing our communities. So the maps were good for seeing the gaps in the data and being able to start advocating for better monitoring and more study. And then they were used in advocacy. One particular moment was the state was considering whether to start regulating rail yards. They had been giving a kind of a waiver to rail yards. So they were used, the maps were used in that case. And then the regional agency was also considering whether to start regulating magnet sources. So the maps were used in both those instances. So one of the realizations here was that the data, one, that the agencies knew very little about magnet sources. So their data on what was attracting the trucks into neighborhoods, bringing that diesel into close contact with people, was very, very limited. So that you would see neighborhoods supposedly not affected by trucks through their neighborhoods, and as reflected in the agency data, with the community knowing that this was a serious problem. And so there was the realization that using these maps would actually downplay the problem in some local areas. But at the same time, the maps do show the disproportionate distribution of these environmental health hazards in EJ communities. So it has the value of showing the relative distribution of these environmental assets and burdens, but it had the limitation of not showing the local reality very well. So like I mentioned, some of the follow-up advocacy was for better data collection, monitoring within neighborhoods on truck traffic. A lot of their freight train data was modeled, and so we were arguing for monitoring there also. And then some of the advocacy I mentioned on the rail yards and then on the magnet source rule at the regional agency. We wanted to leave you with a couple questions that we feel like are useful in evaluating whether a mapping process is really going to kind of live up to the PopEd values and vision that we have. So one of those is, does it lift up and empower community knowledge? You'll see that in the low-tech mapping, people were really able to use their own language on what the issues were with freight transport. Matt put that experience that they had with issues onto the map and really owned the map in that way. Whereas with the regional GIS mapping, we were really limited by what data was available from the agencies. And similarly, does it create a collective ownership over the maps? The low-tech mapping really did, because it can be replicated. The maps really became like a voice of the group. And whereas the GIS maps were, it felt a little bit more like it was our translation, it was our interpretation of what these agencies were saying, rather than our representation of the communities. And the relationships, I mean, a lot of what we try to do is get the maps out of the computers, because so much of the relationship building happens in the discussions, you know, standing around a table, sharing stories. And when you're looking at an online map or ArcGIS or something and just sitting there by yourself, you don't get that exchange that really helps people relate and build that collective sense of what their experience is. And then relevance and accuracy are always a kind of contested issue in participatory research, because the neighborhood scale maps definitely were accurate from the community's eyes, and at the same time, presenting those maps to the agency heads, they were a lot less well received than the maps that were using the agency data, and vice versa. So you get benefits from each, but you gotta think about that ahead of time. And so then, like I mentioned, the root cause analysis is key for developing community power, for developing solutions that actually address and resolve the issues. And that needs to be thought about at the beginning of the mapping process, so that it's not kind of a afterthought of, okay, now that we know this about the issue, what are the solutions we have in mind? And it's often hard to represent in maps some of the root causes. So you'll for instance, the level of organization of the community and community power is not always, it's not a spatial question so much. And so you need to be able to link the maps to other discussions.
Can I have that cup of water?
Shoot.
Oh, I have one right here.
Oh, shoot.
Sorry.
And then finally, does the mapping process allow for advocacy in the end? And I think strategic communications planning offers some frameworks here that are really helpful. You need to be thinking about who your audience is, and that's not always a pop-ed question, right? A lot of times in our pop-ed, we're thinking about community voice, but at the same time, we also need to be thinking about who's listening at the end of the day, who we need to be influencing, and so thinking of it as an exchange and a dialogue. Do you want to talk about the pop-ed curriculum? Okay, so we just published a compilation of workshop activities on these freight transport justice issues, because we've been working on it for almost 10 years and have co-facilitated a lot of workshops and developed a lot of activities. So we put the curriculum together with some of our community partners and have it for free on our website, and we have some postcards at the back of the room in case you're interested, because we just wanted to offer up these tools for other communities to adapt them to their own use. So obviously this work has involved a lot of community partners, allied organizations, funders, and we're just proud to be able to present it, but also want to acknowledge all the work that's gone into it by many, many people. Thanks a lot.